Thank you so much, Mark, and good afternoon, everybody. We're going to present today in a tag team style, so just try to give a new rhythm and maybe a new cadence to the afternoon. We're going to hopefully bring a little bit of energy. We thank you for entertaining us here after your lunch, and we promise to do our best here to keep the energy in the room high. So our goal today is to talk through regional transmission organizations, and you'll also hear us refer to ISOs or independent system operators. There are differences, and I just want to say that today we're trying to do more of the basic nuts and bolts, so we're not going to draw every distinction. So for purposes of today, if you would just allow us to treat those interchangeably, we'll probably use them because we can't help ourselves. But we're going to take a look at more a journalistic style, trying to answer basic questions of what are these organizations, who's involved in them, what do they do, and then we'd also like to take a look at, well, how do they relate to Indiana's IRP process? What's the relevancy for that? How does that benefit customers in the state of Indiana? And then we'd also like to take a look at some of the data that's exchanged between utilities as well as the RTOs. And so everything that I just mentioned is here on the agenda slide. And then at the end, as we've been following today, we'd also like to invite any questions that you have. And so we're going to fly through this today, but we're looking forward to it. It's something that Bill and I both do a lot of work with as part of NIPSCO. And again, there is a lot of complexity. The other point I mentioned today is that we are talking in broad brushstrokes. And so for those of you that are very, very familiar, you might look at some of the bullets here and say, well, there's some nuance to that. And I just ask you to extend us a little bit of grace as we're trying to just cover a lot of landscape here in this one presentation. So for those on the phone, we're turning now to slide 53. And the first question that we offer here is, what is an RTO? Well, RTOs are independent system operators. They're independent nonprofit organizations that are there to provide, you know, primarily three focuses: that in operating the grid, they want to optimize the operation of our transmission system, and also the planning of the system for their region. And so when we talk about RTOs, we're talking about organizations that are looking at regions of the country, large swaths of geography. And in times past, utilities like my company, we looked at our system. And I don't want to say that we looked at it in isolation, but we could not have the broad perspective that an organization like an RTO can have, and that it can look at a large footprint and optimize all of those individual interconnected networks together. And so the RTO is reliably operating their portion of what's called the bulk electric system. And so when we use the term bulk electric system, we're talking about the higher transmission voltages that are used to push power over longer distances before it reaches consumers through the distribution system. Secondly, these organizations provide regional and interregional reliability planning for the system. And Bill's going to walk us through these in more detail. But, you know, one of the benefits of an RTO is that it's not just looking at the regional footprint that it's managing, but it's also working and collaborating with the other RTOs or neighboring systems to try to make sure that the systems are working well together and that we're identifying future solutions that benefit more than just that one local area, to the extent that we can offer up a transmission solution or something else that can provide a broader range of benefits. We want to try to capture that rather than just trying to manage these things individually. And then finally, they also administer multiple markets. And inside of MISO, we've got a capacity market, energy, financial transmission rights, as well as an ancillary services market. And these all did not start on the same day that RTOs came into existence. They've evolved over time, and so we'll talk through some of that. And also to give you a flavor for who's involved with the RTOs and, you know, who's helping them, looking at what they're doing, understanding what's going on. Primarily, we point to, you know, two regulators there, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. The RTOs or ISOs are required to comply with orders that would come out of FERC, as well as because they're operating the system and reliability is a key concern, they're also subject to NERC standards or the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. So now turning to slide 54, this is a picture of North America, and this is just trying to give you a sense of how many RTOs are currently in existence. Well, right now, across America, we've got 7. And you can see that in Canada, there's also some additional system operators up there. But what's unique is that when you look at a state like Indiana, you'll notice very quickly that we're operating 2 RTOs. So we're in the Mid-Continent ISO, and then in the northeast quadrant of the state, you can see that the PJM system right there covers what is Indiana Michigan Power for us. So Indiana split between the two, and you can see the other utilities there in the state: Duke, Indianapolis Power and Light, my company NIPSCO, and Vectren are all inside of MISO. turning to slide 55 then, the next question we have here, well, why are there RTOs? What was the impetus for moving over to this new structure? Why did utilities decide to go this route? Well, it's a bit of an academic question. It's, you know, FERC envisioned RTOs as a way to give existing merchant generators access to non-discriminatory transmission service that power pools were at that time kind of managing. And so the idea here was that FERC wanted to allow merchant generators to have the opportunity to participate and provide power to the grid. And so they encouraged voluntary formation of RTOs. And when we say that, this is something that was happening at the federal level, and the way that this was being adopted is that individual utilities would then join an RTO and they would bring their transmission assets with them and say to the RTO, okay, here's our system, we'd like to give you functional control of it. And so the RTO would start managing that as part of a interconnected mesh of transmission systems, and that's where we started to get into this optimized system operation. And you'll notice, if you remember on the prior slide where we showed the map of the U.S., not every area of the country has gone this direction. So since the mid-1990s, there's been a slow integration as more utilities have made the decision of which RTO they're going to join. But that's not to say that everybody's gone this direction yet, and so there are still some areas of the country that were demonstrated as white space that have not gone this direction yet. All right, and now I'm going to turn it over to Bill, and he's going to start answering the question of who's actually participating inside of these RTOs and give you a better flavor for some of the participants there.
Thank you, Paul. So the RTOs are made up of a lot of different types of entities. The list is up there. The Indiana Utilities, and MISO, and I believe in PJM as well, we are registered as transmission owners. But we also function under a lot of the other categories as well. We are load-serving entities. We are generator operators. To some extent, we're power marketers. And we're even looking, some of us are even looking at the new transmission developers, as that has opened up within the RTO world. We also have our state regulators are very active in the RTO world. Within MISO, there's the organization of MISO states. And in PJM, there's the organization of PJM States Incorporated, OPSI, as well as the OUCC, the Office of Utility Consumer Council, are also very active participants in the RTO world. So what does an RTO do? The main responsibility is the bulk electric system. They are the transmission service provider. They are the ones that are looking at the request to use the transmission system and making sure that there is non-discriminatory access to that transmission system. They are the transmission operator on the day ahead in the real time and looking forward basis. Is the current topology correct and is it able to keep the lights on? They are the ones that are looking over the entire footprint to make sure that the operation of the transmission system is going to support the load that is out there. They're also the reliability coordinator. They're the police to make sure that themselves as well as the local utilities are operating within the standards that Paul mentioned from the North American Electric Reliability Council. So they're making sure that we are operating within the rules and that they are operating within the rules and the lights are staying on. They are the balancing authority. The balancing authority responsibility is basically match generation of load. Keep the lights on, keep the frequency at 60, and make sure that the load and resources are balanced at all times. Planning is a very big piece of what the RTOs do for all of us here. Generation interconnections, we mentioned earlier, the resources, they have to be brought online, they have to connect to the transmission system. MISO does the analysis, PJM does the analysis, to make sure the system can hold that, can take that generation on, or if new assets need to be built to accommodate that. They do analysis of the generation that we have within the footprint. Are we going to be resource adequate going forward, given the plans that we know? Coordination of outages. This is the day-to-day, making sure that changes in the topology because of scheduled maintenance is going to remain reliable. If they identify something that's not, they work with the entities to make sure that changes can be made so that we can keep the lights on. And finally, the coordination of regional and interregional transmission planning. They perform the open and transparent long-term system planning, the transmission planning. What does the system need for reliability? What does the system need for market efficiency? They make sure that our transmission plans are compatible with each other as individual companies. Or what we're thinking of doing, what we need to have done, does it work for the footprint as a whole? And they're also looking at interregional. Between NIPS, or between MISO and PJM, the other RTOs, are the changes that they're proposing, do they impact the other regions? Do they help the other regions, or are they causing additional concern? They're looking for solutions to these issues that are raised. Solutions could be operating issues or operating solutions, such as an operating guide, a temporary solution, or it could be a development, it could be a market solution. They also administer the energy and the ancillary services market. As Matt mentioned earlier this morning, lost the page here. Save that Matt thought for a minute. So they administer the energy and the ancillary service market. They dispatch our systems to match the generation to the load needs on an ongoing basis. They run a security-constrained economic dispatch, which is trying to find the lowest cost solution to providing that power. But that power has to be deliverable. So they're looking at both those scenarios. They're looking at the lowest cost as well as can that power get delivered to where it needs to be delivered. Utilities can buy and sell the electricity on behalf of their customers. This is done in the day ahead in the real-time bidding process of offering our generation in as well as bidding our load into the markets. And the price of electricity changes constantly during the day. There's a lot of factors that affect that. Weather changes, resource changes, topology changes on the system, environmental considerations. So there's a lot of things that the electricity prices are constantly changes. So they're constantly running that model to make sure that we're going to get the lowest price we can and that that product is deliverable. The MISO also, the MISO and RTO, and I apologize for PJM folks out there. I live in the MISO world, and when I think of an RTO, I think of MISO. So my apologies there. But the RTOs both operate, or most of all operate, some type of an annual capacity market or an auction. And this is where Matt mentioned earlier this morning. We have to have resources available to meet our load and that reserve piece on top of the load. We have to have those resources available year-round. So the capacity markets provide a competitive structure for generation owners to offer their, to make their available capacity to load-serving entities, like the Indiana utilities. Utilities can also buy and sell bilaterally, which is done outside of the auction process. But those purchases that count as a capacity resource, just like generation, must be deliverable. We do have an obligation to procure enough of our resources to satisfy that load obligation and that planning reserve obligation on top. And it can be done a couple of different ways. One, we can have enough of our own resources, enough unforced capacity to meet that requirement. We have the ability to self-schedule, which is basically entering, participating in the auction at a zero cost. Offer our generation in at zero, our load in, bid our load in at zero, whatever price comes out of the auction, they're matched up. Or we can do what's called a fixed resource adequacy plan, where we tell the RTOs, here's our resources, here's our load and our obligation. We have enough, here's how we plan to match that up going forward. Or we can just participate in their capacity auctions. Depending on where your position is, if you have excess, that excess generation can be offered into the auctions. If you're going short into the auction year, you can actually purchase from the auction to meet those requirements. But once a generation resource has cleared that capacity market, it must be offered on a daily basis into the energy markets, unless it is out on some sort of a maintenance outage. Resources are obligated to perform. They're called upon, they're expected to be there, and they are obligated to be there. So the passive constructs, the MISO construct and the PGM's construct are different. MISO currently operates a single-year capacity construct. The auction is for the planning year that runs from June 1st to May 31st. That obligation is set based on our contribution to the MISO peak load, our coincident peak to the MISO peak. And we have to carry that for the entire year period. The footprint is separated into individual zones, and that is to make sure that the generation resources or the resources are deliverable to the load, so that we make sure that we have resources available to meet the load where that load is located at. MISO currently is looking at going to a two-season auction with a winter and a summer period. The PGM capacity auction is a three-year forward market. Same planning year, June 1st through May 31st. It's a three-year forward market for that one-year period with subsequent secondary auctions. So they run a base residual auction for a three-year out period. For that one-year period, that auction clears. Then as the planning year comes up, they run up to three additional auctions, which gives the ability for load to be adjusted, for resources to be adjusted. It's very important for demand response. As demand response resources are signed on, they can be introduced into the markets as well. Generation is paid for performance. Was recently implemented by the PGM markets, where higher performing resources will get paid a premium. This is a phased in structure right now. I believe it's 2020. All resources will have to be offered in under the same scenario. The price that comes out of the auctions is a clearing price. It's kind of it's used as a capacity price going forward. It's not a true value of what capacity is. The auctions are looking at a very short-term, one-year, three-year period of what capacity cleared the auction at. The IRP process is looking at a much longer time period, so your capacity values tend to be more in line with what it costs to build or truly buy capacity in the market. I believe with that, I can turn it back over to Paul.
Well, thank you, Bill. I appreciate that. And I'll pick up on that last point that Bill just made, that because we're getting ready to turn and start talking about what are some of the benefits that these bring to Indiana, as well as how does this relate to the IRP process. But just to draw on this point here, that when we're talking about RTOs, oftentimes there are similar terminologies that are used inside of the market spaces that could have the potential to confuse people when you start comparing and contrasting to the IRP. And I just wanted to draw out this one point very clearly, that when we are looking at capacity markets, they are not providing that price signal yet that are years out into the future. So the horizon of time that we're looking at when we're at the state level doing the IRP process is a much longer time horizon. We're looking out 20 years. But right now, the capacity markets for MISO and PJM are more near term. And that's important to keep in mind as we start taking a look and trying to compare and contrast these. So for those on the phone, we're going to be on slide 62. And I'd just like to encapsulate some of the benefits that we've talked about here and draw them out so that they're top of mind as we start looking at the IRP process. So first off, RTOs. Well, they optimize the transmission system. That's one of the benefits in that it's a real-time operation. They also provide the system planning function that allows us to look at a much larger regional space rather than just individual utility systems. And then from that, we think we also have the ability for overall enhanced reliability because we're able to leverage the resources across multiple independent systems, and that's done at an aggregated level. And so by managing that together, we think that that's led to an increase in reliability. Also, there's economies of scale. So these entities are looking at large regions, and basic economics would teach us that it is efficient when you can take eliminate the individual activities of multiple organizations and aggregate that up under one that can do that and likely do it more efficiently in driving at that regional level. One of the next benefits here as we start to pivot towards the IRP is that with the administering of the capacity markets, RTOs are able to provide access to alternative capacity reserves. And that's not to say that pre-RTO, that utilities didn't have access to other generating resources that they didn't necessarily own. Bill already talked to us about those bilateral agreements that still are available today. But it provides some transparency into resources that utilities may not otherwise know about, because you're getting access to resources that are being bid into the capacity market or auction across the entire footprint. And I made the next point there that that's available at competitive prices, because this is done it's clear, you know, mismatching bids to need. And so we have a competitive price that's coming through that particular market or the auction. The next benefit here, we use the words potential long-term price signal. And so again, just thinking through the IRP, in a perfect world, you'd like to know, well, what is the value of capacity for generation for each of the 20 years that I'm looking at? Right now, the capacity markets don't look out that far, but it is starting to bring some more certainty to those future years. So that's one of the intentional goals of the market, is that over the long term, it will provide a signal to know, well, this is what a particular megawatt of power would be worth if I needed to buy it 10 years out into the future, or 5 years out, or whatever that future horizon looks like. And then finally, as we talked about too, that RTOs and ISOs provide evolving markets. And so these weren't all stood up in a single day, but the markets that have been brought up in the RTO spaces have tried to respond to the needs of the regional footprint. And so by doing that, we think that we've seen opportunities where they're able to match products to address customer needs or solve operational or reliability issues. And we already talked about the markets. We've got capacity, energy, financial transmission rights, and ancillary services markets that have been brought up over the course of the RTO history. And now we'd like to talk about specifically what's the relevancy between RTOs and the IRP process here in Indiana. And so looking at slide number 64, we ask the next question, how do they interact? And our first point here is that the IURC, or the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission, is the regulator of Indiana's resource adequacy. And we mentioned here that the IURC regulates the resource requirements for the utility. And that's done through the IRP, that utilities come in and we demonstrate that we have enough resources to meet the forecasted system peak in future years, plus an additional reserve margin. And I take a minute here, if you remember in some of the prior presentations, we showed those curves that there was a level of resources set to meet the load, and then an additional planning reserve margin on top of that to give enough buffer so that we knew if we didn't have the perfect forecast, that we have the right solution in place in future years to maintain reliability and adequately serve those loads. And as we started to mention here, many of the concepts between the IRP and the way that MISO and PJM conduct their capacity auction or their market, they're similar. But there are some differences that exist, and we've listed a couple of those out here that are important to keep in mind. So for instance, the utility system peak may not peak at the same time as the RTO system peak. And so think about that in the IRP process. If you're trying to plan how many resources you as a utility need, you want to make sure that you're looking at the right system peak. You don't want to look at the peak that was established for the region as a whole, but for your system. And so there's a chance that maybe those systems peak coincidentally together, or they may not have. And so that is one of the things when utilities are doing their IRP process, we're looking at our individual system peak. Also, the unforced capacity in the IRP may not equal the utility's unforced capacity in the RTO. And this can be for a variety of reasons, but when there are market rules in place for different types of resources as they're brought into RTOs. And for utilities in doing their resource planning, they may choose to agree with some of the assumptions that those rules are founded on, or they may choose to disagree based on different data or evidences that we have access to. And so again, I just wanted to make the point that to the extent that you're hearing about things like the capacity market, these concepts are very similar, but when you go to do a 20-year plan through an IRP process, it's very important to understand that it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. So in closing up this slide, I would say that utilities include RTO energy and capacity cost forecasts in our IRPs, in order to model the market dispatch and select preferred resource plans in multiple scenarios. And the key here is that now that utilities have joined RTOs, we can't just continue to do IRP processes without recognizing that they are integrated, that there are interactions. And so what we're saying here is that we try to look at decisions around our resources and understand what are they going to be doing as part of the integrated
RTO that we're participating inside of? What are the value of those units in future years or that particular resource? If it's not a generating resource, if maybe it's a demand side resource. And so we have to understand, or we at least have to make assumptions and try to understand what is that going to look like as part of participation inside of an RTO. So in Indiana, we've already mentioned that the state regulates resource adequacy, but RTOs also perform a function. And right now, they're standing in an analysis role for the region's resource adequacy. So RTOs are evaluating the ability of the region as a whole to meet its resource adequacy requirement, but they're also evaluating the ability of smaller areas in that region to meet their planning reserve margin requirements. And so if you think about the map that we showed earlier, MISO in particular, as well as PJM, they're very large. And so when they try to take a look at resource adequacy, they will divide up their footprint into individual zones and evaluate it that way. And for Indiana, it's important to remember that if you're looking at an output from MISO or an output from PJM, that it's not going to tell the whole story for the state of Indiana. And it's also going to incorporate some other additional information because it's very difficult to break your analysis perfectly on the state boundaries. And so for states like Indiana that are split between the two RTOs, it's important to net out the effects of the fact that we're split between the two RTOs. And then we'll make the last point here that while obligated by FERC to perform this verification function, the authority and obligation to ensure Indiana resource adequacy lies with Indiana. So this is a state function to guarantee resource adequacy and ensure it. All right, so now what I'd like to do is turn it back over to Bill. He's going to get us through the home stretch. We'd like to talk about the information that's exchanged and between and among utilities and RTO.
Okay, looks like we're having a little technical difficulty. We'll give Shelby a chance here to redial in real quick.
Welcome to the One Source Infinite Conference.
Our 15 minutes of fame. So our last slide that we've got to present is what's information is being exchanged between the utilities and the RTOs. And a lot like the information needed for the IRP process, we have our load and our resource forecast, our maintenance plans, plans for our generation units. So what are we going to do? We're going to retrofit them. We're going to retire those units. The environmental compliance plans, we've heard that a couple times today. Our demand side resources, generation fuel assumptions, transmission investments, the historical generation information is the GADS reporting requirement, generation availability data system, I believe it is the acronym. And that's filled out by every utility, every we also have the demand response, same type of deal. The DAD system, which is a demand response information system. Scenario planning risk and the emergency recovery plans. Our emergency recovery plans not only have to be reviewed by the RTOs, but they also have to be approved by the RTOs. We actually have to practice those with them as well. So with that, Mark, we are available to take questions.
Great, are there questions for Bill and Paul?